Welcome home. We are WNST, AM 1570, Towson of Baltimore. We are Baltimore positive. We will be taking the Maryland Crab Cake Tour out on the road. I will have some Maryland lottery scratch-offs. I think I'm going to have the Back to the Futures by the time I get to Beaumont this week on Thursday. Following Wednesday, 23rd, we're going to be at Cooper's Pub North. Cooper's North. I keep Cooper's and then Coco's. Try it. Go ahead three times and then go to both places three times and get that gumbo up at Cooper's North and get the delicious coconut shrimp at Coco's. I'm going to be doing both on the 23rd and 30th this month. It's all brought to you by the Maryland Lottery in conjunction with our friends at Raskin Global, our friends at Liberty Pure Solutions, making my water crystal clear. And we're trying to make the NFL draft crystal clear. I had Mike Tenier on this week. I'm going to have some other NFL people on before the draft next week. Luke is about to join me. We have been knee-deep into pitching and hitting and baseball and Mr. Rubenstein's bobblehead and all this stuff going on. The obvious is that Justin Tucker's still on the team. And I only point that out because I sat at the bar at Costas for 8 hours on Friday. And other than my Oriole press credential and the pitching itself, the Ravens thing has been very, very purposely backburnered. Mike Tenier stood guilty as being at the DaCosta press conference in Indianapolis, where he shoo-shooed the Justin Tucker things at that point. You know, this is a time where they're happy to be picking lower because it means they had a good season. Their challenges are what they are. They have a lot of picks, as they always do. And Luke, I'm going to let you come in and sort of square the floor because you wrote a great piece. All of the Justin Tucker stuff aside, all the drama, all the Mark Andrews is making insurance commercials, but can't make a press conference after he drops the ball in Buffalo. All of that aside, they have a draft. It's a big deal. I mean, picking players is such a big deal that Bisciotti had some things to say about it 2 weeks ago on the website, but they've wanted all of this to be a quiet time in the aftermath of the Justin Tucker thing. He's still on the team. And they're going to pick players next week. And you have did a beautiful job of sort of dartboarding the draft board and looking and saying, well, guys, what do we really need around here? We know we got a quarterback, right?
Yeah, and let's be clear. I mean, obviously, and we're going to hear from the Ravens at the pre-draft press conference, the Liars' Luncheon this week. There's not going to be anything. Maybe there we come away with one or two interesting morsels or nuggets, but we know that by and large, they're not saying anything. What they do, you take with not a grain of salt, a boulder of salt, and that's the
I
way it
love that
is, right?
everyone calls it the Liars' Luncheon, and
Oh
I'm the
yeah.
only one who ever told the truth, and I'm banned, and I am the one who named it the Liars' Luncheon.
Yeah.
So that's hilarious. But nonetheless, Kevin
But
Byrne echoed that, by the way, before they named the press box after him. So, but you know, it was off of, just so everybody understands, the alibi breakfast happens at the Preakness. I started calling this the Liars' Luncheon. So, and that was way back when Ozzie and Art and David used to laugh about it.
Yeah, and look, it's not even a criticism. I wouldn't expect them to go out there and tell you 2 weeks
Else would
before
you
the draft.
call it? The
Yeah,
NFL pre-draft luncheon?
I mean that it's called the pre-draft press conference and luncheon. Yeah, but in terms of like what you're actually going to hear, yeah, okay, we really hope this guy's available when we pick 27th overall. But you made a point. I do think all of the Tucker stuff aside, and that's not to say that it's not a major story going into the draft. That's not to say that, you know, it isn't interesting that they haven't shied away when asked that. Yeah, they've been scouting kickers. They've looked at Ryan Fitzgerald from Florida State, for example, some of the other kickers that potentially could be selected on day three of the draft. But until that happens or that doesn't happen, we're kind of in this holding pattern as the Justin Tucker thing goes. But everything else about this roster, everything else about the way the Ravens have gone through free agency, you know, even by Ravens standards, it's felt quieter than normal. And, you know, I'm not trying to draw any connection to the Tucker stuff with that. It's kind of where they are. And we've talked about this. When you're a team that is a Mark Andrews drop and fumble away from potentially playing in the AFC Championship and having a chance to get to a Super Bowl after you've come up short all these years, you know, there isn't a ton to change. when you have a quarterback like the Ravens do. So that was part of, as you cited, at what I worked on at BaltimorePositive.com last week, was nothing that was earth-shattering, but just kind of going through position by position and saying, okay, where's your concern level? Where are you with quarterbacks? Well, they have one of the very best quarterbacks in football, have had that. And you just signed Cooper Rush to a 2-year deal, who I think is a very competent, capable, solid backup quarterback. So, in other words, my concern level at quarterback is none, right? I don't, the biggest point of discussion now for that position is going to be when the Ravens extend Lamar Jackson, whether it's going to be later this offseason, whether it's going to be next offseason, because they're going to have to do it. His cap number next year is around $75 million. But as it pertains to on the field for 2025, it's nothing to talk about with the quarterbacks. So, you kind of go down the list, and let's just, we'll start with the offense as a whole. Running back, they haven't worked out an extension with Derrick Henry yet, despite plenty of chatter that they'd be interested in doing that. He likes it here. Can you come to an agreement that makes sense, understanding he's a 31-year-old running back? Yeah, we'll see. But he's under contract, and they still have Justice Hill. They still have Keaton Mitchell, who's now another year removed from the knee. They're in good shape there, right? So there's not a whole lot to talk about there. Tight ends, I have no idea what their tight end room's going to look like a year from now, but unless they have a draft day trade in their pocket for Mark, with Mark Andrews involved, there's certainly nothing to talk about in terms of, it's deep. It's a good group. You've got your Pro Bowl fullback back to throw him back into the mix. So, there's not a whole lot to talk about there. So to me, there are two positions really on the offensive side that we can talk about. Two position groups, to be clear. Wide receiver, they've added DeAndre Hopkins. Good value signing. I think if you have appropriate expectations for what he is, I think he's a good number three option behind Bateman and Zay Flowers. I think he can still win on the outside some with contested catches. I said this to you when they signed him. To me, he is Odell Beckham 2 years ago, except at the more appropriate price point of $5 million rather than $15 million that they overpaid for Beckham. So could they still add another wide receiver to the mix to fortify their depth there long term? Could they take a mid-round swing and say, just in case something happens to Zay Flowers again, knowing he's small, knowing how important he is, could you do that? Sure, that wouldn't surprise me. Is it a major need, though? Not really. But the offensive line, hey, check mark on re-signing Ronnie Stanley. That move has been lauded around the league as one of the best signings, not technically not at the start of free agency, but right before the start of free agency.
They're going to pick
So,
three players next week on the O-line, right?
I mean, it,
And
I,
maybe two on the D-line.
yeah, I mean, I don't know if three, but definitely two. And I think defensive line, and we'll get to the defense because, yeah, that's one of the
Well,
big
this is
spots
one of those
there.
years we're
But
playing hokey pokey with picks and thinking they're going to move from 27 up to 19 because they find their next corner or their next left tackle, whatever they
yeah.
think. If you think this is a year they're going to fire power out to do that, then you think they're going to take less picks. I would hear that, right? I can say a lot of things about Eric DaCosta, and I have, and you can read them, and I'll be glad to recount all of them. But picking football players, they're good at this. They're really good at this. And how they
Sure.
use these picks, they're as good as anybody's ever been at this. So whatever they do, they've thought about it 100 times more than you and I have. That really.
No question. And for the most part, it works out. Sometimes it doesn't because it's not going to work out 100% of the time for any team.
But there is a plan.
Sure. And I think where you look at your offensive line right now, obviously Stanley's your left tackle. Obviously Linderbaum's your center. Obviously Roger Rosengarten is your right tackle. You assume Falele at right guard. And as things stand right now, you'd like to think that they have a certain degree of confidence in Andrew Voorhees playing left guard because, hey, they started last season with him as their left guard before he got hurt and they pivoted to McCary and they said, hey, let's just stick with this. So it's not as though you couldn't, if they had to play a game this week, you wouldn't look at their offensive line group and say, okay, I see a starting five there. But the big question, one, you want to have competition for Voorhees. I think you want to have competition for Falele, if we're being honest. If John Harbaugh was given truth serum, I think they'd at least want to have competition for Falele. Because keep in mind, he's entering the last year of his rookie deal. You know that he's been with this program now 4 years. So, I think you want competition, and at the very least, you certainly need depth. Because even though you did re-sign Ben Cleveland, which raised eyebrows because of the off-field, the DUI, a few weeks before they
Zero
re-signed him,
tolerance. Zero tolerance. Yes.
but even with that, even putting that element of it aside, I mean, who are your other depth pieces? If you have an injury to any of those guys that I project as starters, who's stepping in? Okay, I'll hear Cleveland at one of the guard spots. Okay, but he also could be facing, he could be facing discipline from the league for a DUI. He could be suspended a game, I mean, whatever. And it's not like he's a slam dunk proven commodity that he's even a sure thing to make the roster. Right now he would be because of their lack of depth, but you need to add, there was, recent report from The Athletic about veteran swing tackle George Fant, talking with the Ravens. Maybe that's a post-draft signing, as we've seen them do some of that in recent years especially. But they need inside and outside depth in their offensive line. So you said three picks. I don't know. Excuse me. I don't know if it's three. I mean, it depends where in the draft, obviously. If you're talking six, guys that are late day three picks, that's more inventory than depth when you really think about that late in the draft,
How
'cause
many
you just
picks do
don't
they
know.
have today?
They have 11
And
picks.
how many are they really going to make? Are they really going to make 9? Are they really going to make 11? Or are they
I
really
mean,
going to make 13
I think a
because
lot of
they
it
deal from
depends.
27 backward to 35 and pick something up and something else up, and then they start going into wheeler dealer mode?
Yeah.
I don't look, dude, I don't know their temperature, and you would have to tell me, because they lie about a lot of stuff. They have a liar's luncheon this week, as dubbed by me, who's been thrown out and not allowed to ask questions anymore. But I used to do this as well as anybody and get their temperature and knowing sort of how they felt about certain players and how they feel about certain sections of the draft and where the depth would be. That would be my vibe in the next 10 days, is to say, are they really going to make 11 picks, or
Yeah.
they really just want to make 8 or 9 picks because they don't feel like they have jobs available? I feel like they got a lot of jobs available. I feel like this is, it's nice and tight around Kyle Hamilton and Roquan Smith and Marlon, the people that are making money.
Sure.
But I think of the people that aren't making money, other than Zay Flowers and, a couple of other positions that they feel great about. I don't know if they feel great about running back after Derrick Henry or how much tire they feel like as we watch Charlie Morton and, some other Kyle Gibson try to do it. People were making fun of Derrick Henry this time last year and saying, well, too old, going to slow down. I don't know. I saw him carrying chains up the hills about a month ago, so much so that I have his Oilers jersey. So I'm hoping to wear it for at least one more season to honor his Hall of Fame status, maybe with a ring and a parade. That time will tell. But I don't know that there's any spot on the roster, and you've indicated all of them, that they don't feel some depth issues. But I know there have been times where they feel like, we don't want to pick 11 players. We don't have 11 jobs. I don't
Yeah.
know that they feel that way now. I feel like they could move backward and get 13 players and feel like, hey man, let's get six. Let's come out of this draft where Luka and Nestor in 2028 are talking about having three or four starters and having some depth pieces and another Pat Ricard or another thing that they find, including a kicker, right? I mean,
Sure.
aside from all of that, but where is the next great draft for them? And Eric's always trying to find that.
Yeah, and let's be clear. I think it's important when we say 11 picks, where are those 11 picks? I think it's important to acknowledge a couple things here. One, they only have three picks in the top 128 picks of the draft. So you have your first, a second, a third. You have two fourths, one of them being a comp pick. You have a fifth round comp pick. Four of those 11 picks are sixth round picks, and then they have a seventh round pick. Let's call a spade a spade. For as much as you love the dream scenarios where you draft a starter in the sixth round or the seventh round, you never go into a draft expecting that a player that you're taking that
Now,
late
Luke, let me
is
remind you
going to
that
be a
Terrell
starter.
Davis and Tom Brady were taken
Hey,
the
well,
third day of the
but
draft.
my point is, look, you can find guys, and look, Adalis Thomas was a great example of that. Chuck Clark in more recent years was a great example of that. Guys that you pick that you like, that you like as depth pieces, and they end up becoming starters, but you're never planning for that, right? So I think more pragmatically speaking, you're looking at this draft and you're saying, okay, we have a first, we have a second, we have a third, we have two fourths, we have a fifth. You have six picks that you're making. When you draft guys in the first five rounds, you fully expect them to be on your roster. That's kind of the line of demarcation. Yes, when you if they do make four picks in the sixth round as they're currently scheduled to make, you're hoping they make the roster. But we also know, gun to your head, you're not sitting there with a extremely high degree of confidence in saying that a sixth round pick is definitely going to make the roster, because we just know how that works. And if a sixth round pick can't play, he's not going to make the roster. He's going to get cut. And he's probably going to land on the practice squad then. So I think for me, and look, I've made no, I don't mince words about this. I have not followed college football intimately closely in the way that the draft experts do. I'm eyeball deep in baseball coverage right now. But when you hear the Daniel Jeremiahs, the Mel Kipers, the Todd McShays of the world, who break down the draft as their full-blown livelihood, what you hear, first of all, what sticks out, there's so many questions about the quarterbacks, right? There aren't even the people that really like these quarterbacks, there's no generational guy that everyone universally adores, right? I mean, Cam Ward, okay, right? But he's not viewed in the same way that some of, recent top, elite of the elite quarterback prospects. So that always impacts things. And we're seeing that right now. I mean, are the Giants going to take a quarterback?
Well,
Are
it
the
affects
Browns going to take
trade
a quarterback?
value at a
Yeah.
massive level for
Right.
whatever those wacky, I'm going to deal the whole draft for Ricky Williams kind of
Right.
things
But
happen.
I don't know if anyone feels that way about any of these quarterbacks, right? So you have that. And in, beyond the quarterback, so the quarterbacks always, attract the most attention because it's the shiniest position. But you kind of look at this draft, and what you hear people say a lot is this feels like more of a depth draft. It feels like this is a draft where you can find starters. But if you're looking for superstars, and obviously we're going beyond the top 10 picks. I mean, you look at some of the guys at the very top of the board. Travis Hunter is an amazing generational kind of talent in terms of a guy that could play two ways. And but you get beyond those top five, top 10 prospects. I think you get much more into there not being a whole lot of differentiation. And you're looking at guys over the next couple rounds that you're hoping you can come away with starters. I think if you're Eric DaCosta, he would probably tell you that with the picks that we have, knowing that we don't have a ton of picks in the top 125, but can we come away with three starters? And that doesn't mean three starters in 2025, mind you, but can we come away with three starters, maybe four, in a long-term, looking at it with a long-term view? If you could do that any year, that's a draft that you're going to give a thumbs up to overall. Whether you hit on every single early pick or not, you come away with three or four starters, or you come away with two starters and two quality backups, you'll take that most years. So, but that sounds like that's the kind of draft this is. It doesn't sound like, beyond you get beyond the first 10, 15 picks, I think you'll find a lot of noise in terms of mock drafts and where guys kind of line
Well, and
up.
this is where for me, if you're Eric and you're a 27 and a tackle falls into the teens or into something reachable between 16 and 25,
Yeah.
and there's something there that you have to give something backward away that would sound like a backup linebacker or a depth piece on the D line
Yeah.
or whatever. If you feel like you're getting a starting player, if they feel like they can find a Kyle Hamilton kind of player, and that's kind of along the lines of their mojo, man, like that's kind of the way they operate to some degree in that space is to say, we love this guy. We think he's the eighth best player in the draft.
Yeah.
Somehow he's there at 19 or 20. He's a freaking starter. He's a player we're going to have to give a second contract to. We know we can get a starter there. I don't like the corner we're going to get stuck with at 27.
Yeah.
They're out there today and the next 10 days, and one of the reasons they come and lie to you and buy you a nice lunch from the legend of Eddie Dobkin is because they're practicing this, right? So that they don't have one of those ish shows that the Vikings had that year, couldn't get their card up, and the Jaguars had that. Like they want to be rehearsed in all of this because this is Bisciotti's jam, dude. Like Did you see his eyes light up in that video?
He
Doesn't look
loves
like
the
much.
draft.
Yeah, I mean this. So they sit and they do all of this to say, who is worth dealing for? Who are we going to die for? Who are the 12 guys that we know are starters that we want on our football team? Can we get one of those guys? I want one of those guys, not one of the other guys. Get me one real player in this first round. And what did they say? F those picks in the Rams? Yeah, the F those picks back in the second and third round.
Well, I don't think you're ever going to hear the Ravens say that, let alone actually think that. But I because you mentioned it, and this is where we can pivot to the defensive side. We've talked about the offense. I mean, offensive line's the big one, right?
By the way, I
Whether
used to do this 20 hours a week for 8 weeks leading up to the draft. So
Oh,
doing it
no
once is
question.
fun, you know?
Well, but I think, and you mentioned his name, Kyle Hamilton, and that's where I think this draft is interesting for the Ravens because on defense, they certainly need more depth at other spots. Defensive line, okay. You love Matt Ibike. I mean, you extended him last year. Travis Jones, I think has very much at least proven himself to be a quality starting caliber defensive tackle. But Michael Pierce is retired. Brent Urban is still unsigned, so maybe he's back, maybe he's not. But either way, he's on the wrong side of 30. Broderick Washington, right now, if you're talking about your base defense, which they don't play very much of anymore, you don't play very much three defensive interior defensive linemen anymore. But Broderick Washington, probably you'd like to be more of a depth piece than a guy that you're saying, okay, he's going to start. So they need depth there. There's no
And who's going
question.
to sack the quarterback is pretty
No doubt. Well,
primary.
Edge, look, on paper, if you're looking at the Ravens from a 30,000 foot view, you've got two outside linebackers that had double digit sacks last year, Oway and Kyle Van Noy. However, Van Noy is another year older. Oway is in the final year of his contract, and I think he's a really tricky valuation guy, meaning how much do you really want to spend to extend him? Do you think he's your next Terrell Suggs, which I don't think anyone actually thinks that, or is he your next Matt Judon, who you liked and you even tagged for a year, but you didn't marry him, right? You didn't extend him long term. Whether that was the right decision or not, that's what they decided to do. So the point is,
Judon was a better player, by the way.
I'd agree with that. Oway had a good year this past year. I'm not dismissing that, but is he so good understanding all of the guys that you have to extend, all of your young players, the Hamilton deal, the Linderbaum deal coming up, another Lamar extension, right? I mean, all the guys that are coming down the pike, as far as needing to extend that you absolutely want to keep. I don't know if Oway's in that group. I just don't.
I
And
think
maybe
he's
he
just a
is.
guy, and that
And
would
that's
be
where
the
you don't want to
purgative
overpay for
way
that.
that Eric DaCosta and Phil Savage would refer to
Sure.
that in the early, just a guy, like I mean, replaceable part to me, not a key. Based on what the body of work for me, financial, otherwise, I want to and need to and must do better than him for me.
I'm not hearing you right now. It might be a bad connection, but you mentioned Oway. We were talking about Oway, and whether you love him or not, it's very much a case of he's in a contract year, and what's the price point? Where are you comfortable extending him, and is he going to be amenable to that? Let's face it, David Ajabo is closer to being on the roster bubble than a breakout season at this point in time. I mean, it's just what it is. I feel for the kid. He works hard. The injuries have been a major bummer because I think he had some really elite potential at one point in time, but he's in a contract year. You look at their other options, these are more guys than players that you think are going to break out. So you look at Edge, they could certainly stand a deal there. But the point I was trying to make, and we've kind of gone all over the place here, but you mentioned Kyle Hamilton. If there's one position that I point to right now where they absolutely need to add someone, it's safety. We know the Ravens want to be multiple on the back end of their defense with their secondary. We've seen it. We've seen them play much more dime in recent years. Nickel has become the base defense in the modern NFL. I mean, that's just the truth. So they added, they added a corner in Awuzie a couple weeks ago, who I think, if healthy, can be a very rock solid number three corner to go with Marlon Humphrey and Nate Wiggins. but certainly you're still looking at corner. But right now it's safety. Hamilton, I mean, it's just a matter of when they're going to extend him and when they're going to make him the highest paid safety in the NFL, whether that's now or later. That's what's coming, presumably. Ardarius Washington is a restricted free agent. I don't think anyone has sniffed around trying to sign him to an offer sheet, but that's still there, at least for a little bit longer. But he's also someone who had a great year, but he has quite an injury history. Are you going to commit to him? And even if you do, even if you feel really good about those two guys as your starters moving forward, which if they do, that's fine. Who are your other safeties on the roster right now? Bo Brade, who was an undrafted free agent last year, and Sanusi Kane, who was a late day three pick. So I think where you look with the Ravens picking 27th, the name that you've heard, two names you've heard a lot of people throw out there, Malachi Starks from Georgia and Nick Emenwori from South Carolina. They are not just safeties by title, but they are very versatile pieces that can line up in the slot. They can play deep. They can play in the box. Especially Emenwori, who, he's 6'3", 220 and runs like a corner. I mean, he's, he definitely has some developing to do. And you talk to people who watched his tape. I mean, it's a little more inconsistent than you'd like him to be for looking at the physical traits. But man, if it would work out where you could draft one of those guys at 27, I mean, you talk about another Swiss Army knife kind of piece that you could put in the back end of your defense, and not even just the back end, but move guys around. That allows you to move Hamilton around again more so than you could at the second half of last year. That's the spot where, look, they could add defensive line, edge, off-ball linebacker. I'm not looking to do it early because Trenton Simpson he's got to figure it out. He's got to play. He's got to be able to play well enough. But you could certainly still add another guy at that position. You could absolutely add another corner. But to me, safety is a spot where I look at it in terms of how Zach Orr and Chuck Pagano want this defense to run, with the back end being multiple and kind of positionless, so to speak. They need another safety. And doesn't have to be Starks or Emenwori, but man, the high-end ability that one of those guys could bring to what you already have. And I mean, that would just make that defense, I think, on the back end that much more formidable and dangerous, which in turn could help you at edge rusher, which, look, they absolutely need to add another edge rusher. And, I don't want it to be waiting until the fifth or sixth round, obviously, but you can only pick the players that are on the board. And the reality is, even if they want to move up, Nestor, it's not going to be easy for them to move up because, as I said, a lot of their picks are late. Those late picks, you might be able to move up a spot or two, maybe three spots, something like that. But, to go from 27, if you absolutely are obsessed with getting a player at any position, to move up 10 spots, to move up a dozen spots, I mean, that's going to be expensive for them because, you're probably talking about potentially having to trade, future picks and starting to get into that game. So not to say they won't, not to say they can't, but at the same time, when you look at how this draft profiles, I think there's going to be a lot more, it's going to be a noisy. It's going to be a little more interesting to see how teams stack up their boards, with their 16th through 45 on their draft board. I think you're going to see a lot of variation team to team. So, does that mean you move up or does that mean you be patient because you're thinking, who knows? Maybe there could be a scenario that's not going to be quite the same deal as Kyle Hamilton a couple years ago because the Ravens were picking in the middle of the first round when that happened. But it might be someone that you think is the 13th best player on your board. But because there's so much variance from team to team with how they rank these players, you might have someone that falls like that for you. So it's going to be interesting in that on that front. But yeah, for me, if I'm looking position by position, as I did in my look at BaltimorePositive.com, I think you look at the defensive side of the ball and you see much more need for depth, for guys that can be viable parts of your sub packages. Whereas the offense, for me, really, the offensive line is only this, that's the one position group on offense where I say, yeah, they absolutely need to add depth. Whereas wide receiver they could, but if they didn't, I don't think it's the end of the world. And some of those spots, like running back and tight end, it's like, okay, you could draft one. How are you going to fit them on the roster at this point? That's where you're talking. So, but defense, I think you could take a player at just about any position and justify it. I mean, like I said, I wouldn't be crazy about an off-ball linebacker early because you're already paying Roquan Smith. Trenton Simpson's, he was the third round pick, and I think you need to trust that he's going to develop to at least be a guy that you trust on early downs. And then if you do take another safety, if you do take another corner relatively early, then I think you get into third down, you get into passing situations where you just play more dime then. I mean, this team comes away with Malachi Starks or Eamon Worry, they're going to be in dime when they get into second and long and third down. I mean, they're going to be in dime where Roquan Smith's going to be the only linebacker on the field at that point in time. So I think that's what they'd like to do. They certainly need to add another safety. They really, really could stand to add another corner. So that's where we're looking. But really, on the defense, they need depth pretty much anywhere, which isn't a that's not an indictment on them. That's actually kind of sort of what you want in terms of they can go into this draft and they're not really in a position where, like, oh my goodness, we must take a starter at this specific position, 27th overall, or we're in big trouble. I don't think they're there.
Well, if Ronnie Stanley took $28 million and went and played in Jacksonville or
Then
something, that
you'd
would
be
have been
saying, oh
different.
my gosh, how are you, like, who's playing left tackle? Because
Like the
otherwise it's.
Orioles asking who's pitching now, right?
Yeah, right, exactly. So I think they're in a good spot. I mean, this roster is one of the very best in the NFL. It is. It's not perfect. They need to add across the board defensively with their depth. But John Harbaugh made the comment at the owners' meetings, and you hear coaches say this kind of stuff a lot, but this is a time where I agree with him. He said, if we had to line up and play today, we'd feel pretty good about our starting 11 on both sides of the ball. And I agree with them. Compared to any team that's going to have some positions of weakness, any team's going to have some positions that doesn't have immaculate depth. I mean, that's just a reality with the salary cap. So I think this is a draft that, like I said, the Ravens don't necessarily need to come away with a guy that starts day one. I mean, Nate Wiggins didn't start day one, but by halfway through the season, you felt good about him playing. And, I think you're going to feel even better about him in year two. I think he's going to be that kind of player for them. So you're hoping if you can come away with whatever position it is, you're hoping it's someone that maybe doesn't have to play week one, but certainly if you want them to be able to play sooner than later. And, you're hoping it can be someone that can do that. And going back to what I said at the beginning, maybe it is a guard, I mean, picking late. Ben Grubbs back in what, 2007, someone like that. If it's a guard, no one's going to be excited about that because that's such a, it's not a sizzle position. It's not a position that is going to get anyone excited. But if that's the best player available, then so be it. You make your offensive line better to protect number eight, by sitting in the pocket, then that's not a bad thing. So my point is, they don't have a ton of draft capital, even if, yes, they have 11 picks. A lot of them are later. But everyone that talks about this draft who knows much more about it than I do, they say that, this feels like a pretty good draft from a depth standpoint. And luckily for the Ravens, that's kind of where they are. They don't need to find three day one starters in this draft. If they do, then great. God bless. I mean, you'll be even better then. But for them, they're really in a position where, depth is okay. Year one depth is okay. And guys that maybe they're not ready to start year one, but if they're ready to start years two, three, and four, then great. If you can come away with a
Well,
few
that's what
players
Wiggins
like
was
that,
last year, right?
yeah,
Yeah,
exactly.
yeah.
So and Wiggins looks like he's going to be a really good
Well,
pick.
and you mentioned Trenton Simpson and some other guys, whether they're going to emerge or not, Falele, some other guys. Luke, I tell you what, man, enjoy the Liars lunch and do me a favor when you're out there. Because they're football players and I'm an athlete, an athletic supporter, but not an athlete, I always went to the yogurt thing over there. They always had this delicious French vanilla. It was either ice cream or yogurt, frozen. And I would always get, to honor Eddie Dobkin, fresh berries. So if they have some pineapple, then none of that goopy peach nonsense. I'm talking about fresh fruit here. Some
Yeah,
mango,
not the
if they're
canned
slicing it
stuff.
up. Right. I mean, you got some nice blueberries. Blueberries and French vanilla, perfect. And if they have a little granola there, maybe a little chia seed, something like that, make the bone strong. Throw all that in there for me. Maybe a little honey on top, or caramel, butterscotch, if they have such a thing. And just have a little extra dessert for me. All right. That's all I'm asking. I don't ever ask you to eat an extra hot dog in the press box or get that extra crab cake because I know how bad the food usually was at the Ravens games. But this is particularly different because, you know, Eddie was a friend of mine and it's his place and it's his kitchen. And I miss the food there. Not really, but I do miss the yogurt and the little dessert thing. So have that for me at the Liars' Luncheon, okay?
That sounds good. That's doable.
And do me, by all means, ask a question to piss him off, just for me, for old time's sake. I don't even know what that would be, you know? Something about the kicker, probably.
I've asked plenty of questions that they haven't liked over the years. I'll stand up for myself a little bit there. I'm not afraid to ask a tough question, to be clear.
Yeah, I know you're not. I mean, that's why I
I know.
said
And
ask him something
I
tough.
wasn't implying that you, yeah, I mean, you know,
Why
go
do they
pick.
do this thing?
You
Maybe that's my
want to
that's
know the very blunt answer? The NFL requires it.
the league makes them do it. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, like across the board. I mean, all these teams. One of the NFL offseason media requirements is that teams have to do a pre-draft press
This is
conference.
their way to hype the draft. So that's fine. Yeah. And by the way, schedule, anybody waiting on that? That's so May.
It's gonna be. I saw something. I forget where I saw it, but it was from a reputable. I don't know if it's Pro Football Talk. It was a reputable source. To vary. Some degree.
They've moved this thing. They've just
Yeah,
moved it. Yeah.
I think they were saying somewhere in the neighborhood of like mid-May. So that's what we're talking about. There's been a lot of speculation because what the Ravens were assigned, that what was it the UK as far as from a branding standpoint or something like that. So there's a lot of speculation they could wind up playing overseas for a game. We'll see about Christmas. Three Christmas games this year. How about that, right? I
Here's
mean.
my prediction. Because you and I have baked up shuffling off to Buffalo to see the end of, I'm going to call it Rich Stadium as a proper
Don't
name,
go to
Orchard
Buffalo
Park.
for Christmas.
They're going to play Christmas night in Buffalo, right?
Oh,
I mean, they are.
it'll be a foot of
By
snow
the way, it's a
too.
Thursday too, so they're treating it like Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
So, all right. All that drama ahead, as I wear my purple Curio O shirt and the O's, need to get some offense going, as well as some better pitching, but God bless on that. Speaking of Ohio in town all week, and that'll be the Guardians and the Reds in. Luke will be at the ballpark on Thursday. We will be at the Beaumont, and in this segment, since you and I have been communicating, I have put together just a beautiful event at the Beaumont on Thursday. So I went from, I always say to my wife, like Monday mornings, I'm like, hey, I wonder if the show's going to be good this week. And at the end of the week, I'm like, we kicked their ass again this week. So by the end of the week, I'm going to come up with something really good for the Beaumont on Thursday. Nothing better than sitting with Beano Ranson on Friday and talking basketball and having Greg Sespaniak come by and honoring the great Costas. And I'm just allowed to say it like I'm from Dundalk. Triantafylos. I can. I don't have to have the Greek pronunciation of that because my Greek is skata. We learned that last week, and it was just a beautiful day. We honored Mr. Costas. I had Chuck from Drug City come over, although he did not bring me any highballs. He has promised them to me at Drug City. So I had a really nice Dundalk experience last week. You'll be hearing that out on the air this week, including Beano Ranson, who Luke knows as the longtime assistant coach to Mark Turgeon and sort of recruiter guy whose kids over at Mount St. Joe, and I know him as the 10-year-old kid who was ambidextrous and could go left and right for my basketball team that helped us finish second in the Rosedale Golden Ring Middle School 8 a.m. league championship in 1989 in the gym league and the house league. So Bino and I got together, and that was a beautiful thing. This week's going to be Don't tell Bino I said this. It might even be better. Like I got something for the Beaumont that's going to be crazy this week. We're going to have some Maryland Lottery scratch offs to give away. I'm going to have some Back to the Future scratch offs in the DeLorean. And then next week we're going to be at Cooper's North, which is better than a DeLorean, hanging out with Ron Schultz and Nick Schultz. And talking about LLS and saving lives and leukemia and lymphoma and lots of things I know a whole lot more than I should know about. That'll be at Cooper's North next on the 23rd, next Wednesday. And then on the 30th, we're going to be at Coco's Pub. And I've got all sorts of great guests, including Jamie Costello, who's going to come out and talk. Everybody's talking about Little League. They all have kids in Little League. My kid came out and drank beer with Mia Costas. He's not thinking about Little League. Although every time I come through Pennsylvania, I think about Luke Jones's Little League fence and make me want to go back and play Bad News Bears all over again. But I got to watch the Blue Jays play baseball on Sunday, which was better. And somehow they won. Luke and I are going to talk football. We're going to talk baseball. He's going to be doing both this week, the Liars Luncheon, as well as Oriole Park at Camden Yards. And as always, if there's any breaking news, you get it first on the WNST Tech Service, brought to you by Cole Roofing and Gordian Energy, my friends who are taking me as an ambassador to Las Vegas. Ha! I'm the designated driver in Las Vegas. That says everything. We're Baltimore positive. Stay with us.